This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to begin today with hate speech, specifically racist hate speech among teenagers, why they use it and the effect it has on those targeted by it. We've been hearing a lot about this in the Boston area recently. A case in point, complaints by African-American students at the Boston Latin School of racist comments from fellow students and teachers. On this program, Maggie Noel and Kylie Webster-Cazot, black students at Boston Latin, told us about some of the comments they've heard from their white classmates.
You don't like it here, go back to Africa, or I'm going to scream the Pledge of Allegiance the next day in homeroom. Sorry if my freedom offends you. We should have never bought you. We should have never brought you here.
The Latin School is now facing a civil rights investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office. There are other recent examples of this kind of thing, including anti-Semitic graffiti found at Newton North High School. And earlier this month, students at Catholic Memorial High School taunted a group of fans from Newton North, including a Newton North father, David Pemstein, with anti-Semitic chants of, "You killed Jesus."
We heard the "You killed Jesus" chant, and I think there was a moment where everyone in our area just kind of paused in disbelief, and we kind of turned around and said, did they just say that?
Well, they did, and administrators at Catholic Memorial High School held a series of student assemblies to address the problem and make changes in their curriculum. But all this raises the question, what's going on here? What drives teenagers to resort to this kind of hate speech? Well, for some insight on this, we're joined by Joni Geltman. She's a lecturer in the psychology department at Curry College. She's also author of A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens, talking to your kids about sexting, drinking, drugs, and other things that freak you out. She's been on the program before, and we're happy to have you back. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Joni Geltman.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us, two seniors from Newton North High School, twin sisters Allison and Naomi Foreman Katz. They wrote a letter to the Boston Globe about the anti-Semitic chants earlier this month, and welcome to both of you. It's great to have you on Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And listeners, we'd love to hear from you in this conversation. It's an important one. Teens, parents, teachers, do you hear examples of racist speech in your school, among your friends, among your peers? If so, where does it come from? What explains it? And what's the best way to address it, to stop it? You can give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook. And you can tweet us as well with your questions and comments at Radio Boston. So, Joni and Naomi, I'd like to start with you. Tell us, you wrote this letter to the Boston Globe, and I'd love to get you to express what it is you expressed in that letter and your response to what happened there. Who wants to start?
Go ahead.
This is Naomi.
Yes. So we originally wrote this letter because our school was addressing the issues of anti-Semitism both at the basketball game and the graffiti earlier in the year. And we thought it was important to really address all issues of oppression that we were seeing at school. And we were seeing a lot early in the year. There are instances of sexism and racism, racist questions that were submitted to a black advisory council. And, you know, homophobia as well, trash talk at basketball games included homophobia, and we wanted the school and the general population to address these issues as well as the anti-Semitism.
Right. Now, Allison, if I'm correct, the school did address this. I mean, this particular issue that we're talking about where the students were talking about "You killed Jesus." Catholic Memorial High School actually did sort of get these students together. Were you satisfied with the response?
Yeah, I was actually very impressed at their response. And I thought it kind of set a good example for us, especially considering as while our school did address the anti-Semitic comments and the anti-Semitic graffiti, there had previously been kind of a silence about other issues of hate speech and discrimination. So that was pretty much why we wrote the letter, to point out those other issues and how they're very much issues.
Right. And one of the things you said in the letter is while the school, Catholic Memorial High School is very quick to sort of jump on this issue, there are other issues where school administrators aren't so quick to respond to, right?
Right. So early in
Naomi,
the year,
yeah,
the Feminism Club had created these posters, and they were covered with a lot of really sexist responses and, you know, the racist comments that were submitted. And homophobia, and, you know, we're seeing a lot of this at school. We're seeing anti-Semitism earlier in the year. And a lot of that we felt wasn't really addressed by the administration. Since then, though, there has been a lot of action to bring the students together, bring the administration together, and find ways to combat these things, to combat all forms of hate speech, not just the anti-Semitism. Mm.
So, Joni Geltman, I'd love to come over to you. What's going on here? When, you know, you've written this book about how to talk to kids about young people, I don't like calling them kids, young people about difficult subjects. But when you hear teenagers using language like this in these kind of incidents, what explains this? What are you thinking?
Well, I think there's two major areas. One is that the part of the brain that's in highest activation during adolescence is the amygdala, which is the feeling center of the brain. So oftentimes, teens are feeling before they're thinking. And the edit button that hopefully most adults have, although judging by this election year, it seems to be absent there as well. But there's a natural edit button that lives in our brains that tells us, you know, if you have, you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all. That's sort of what lives there. And so kids are impulsive and they're emotional and they don't think before they speak. So that's in play.
Yeah. But is there something, I don't know, being signaled by the adult world, or by the community around them, by the culture at large, that somehow this kind of speech is okay?
Well, I think that kids often look for the vulnerability in their own vulnerability. I think teens generally feel their life is quite full of change all the time, whether it's their brain, their body, their future, all the things that they are worried about. And so they don't have the controls that they normally have, and so they're very vulnerable. And oftentimes it's, you know, the looking out for number one.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they tend to attack before they're attacked.
Yeah. I'd love to, Naomi and Allison, I'd love to give your response to this. I mean, Joni's sort of almost giving almost a biological sort of explanation for the adolescent brain, and impulse control is really what we're talking about here, or a lack of impulse control. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think we're both taking psychology, and we both have been learning a lot about this. And it definitely is, you know, kind of a weak point with teens. And I think that is definitely something that's in play. But I think what's also in play is kind of the culture that we live in. So, you know, the political landscape, TV shows and movies that just spend their time making fun of marginalized groups. All of that kind of excuses these chants and taunts and graffiti and makes it seem as if they're okay. And yeah, it's just a joke, which and it's not just a joke. It's something that we do take really seriously.
Yeah. Naomi.
And I think that's definitely true. I agree with that fully. But I also think that we need to hold teenagers to a higher standard. You know, I don't think that we should excuse any behavior by just saying, oh, they're just teens. They're just teens. You know, they're not really thinking about what they're saying. You know, I think we are capable of listening to why this hate speech isn't a good idea and why it's affecting people and why it's hurting people. And I think we should make sure that teens need to understand that, you know, that has a consequence and it has an effect. And so I think that we should hold them to the standard where they should be expected to understand why hate speech is bad.
There's some content. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Joni, that I think you're so absolutely right. And I think the culture, one of the problems with our culture now is that there is so much that teens can do and say and have no feedback from another person. So they can write things on Instagram, or they can say things about other people on some of these anonymous sites. And there is no feeling consequence. They become just words. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's missing. I think your point is exactly right, that they need to get caught in some ways, someone to say, hey, that really was offensive and that really hurt me. And so to hear those words, that hurt me, I'm offended. So much of what teens say and do, there's nothing for them to hit up against because they can put it out there and nobody is saying anything. So I think the more people do things like you guys have been doing, to say things back, and then the consequences aren't just suspension or something, but there should be conversation one-on-one with kids, not in big, large groups like assemblies where kids can tune out and not speak to each other, but there should be an opportunity for a Jew and a non-Jew to sit opposite each other and say, here's what it felt like when someone says, you killed Jesus. I mean, they need to hear the words,
right,
and then they need to hear what they need to understand. They lose that sense of empathy when they don't get confronted by it.
Naomi and Allison, were you at that basketball game, by the way, when the chants of you killed Jesus started?
I was there for 5 minutes, so yeah. I didn't hear any of that.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually there. I was there at the time, and I didn't hear it. I didn't notice that happening.
Right. But when you heard about it and after the fact, what did you feel? I mean, how did it strike you?
Well, you know, at first I didn't think much of it. I thought, oh, you know, that's kind of funny. But then realized later, you know, after people explained to me why this is, you know, that idea, You Killed Jesus, has a huge history in anti-Semitism.
Right.
So once I really understood that, you know, I began to take it more seriously and I began to realize, you know, this isn't the first time that's happened. There's been a history in basketball games of a lot of,
Yeah, and now in that particular event, there's actually some context here. So if I have this, if I understand this correctly, the Newton North students initially were taunting the Catholic Memorial kids for being an all-boys school, mm-hmm. asking, where are your girls? They use sort of a crude term to sort of make their point, which I don't need to mention on the air. And then it sort of escalated and suddenly the Catholic Memorial kids are taunting back, You Killed Jesus. So, Joni, it seems like we've got sort of some escalation here, where it starts as kind of, I don't know, almost like silly, a sort of silly prank, and suddenly it goes into really dangerous territory.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one person maybe had, it started with one person and then a whole, it became like this group event, a group chanting kind of event. And that's another thing that happens, not just with teenagers, it happens with adults as well. If you look after any, you know, big sporting event, you know, the riots that happen afterwards, it becomes this group mentality. And specifically in adolescence, I think kids feel this pressure sometimes to do what the group is doing, this what we call the imaginary audience, which is this worry about what other people are always thinking about you. And so if I don't come, if I'm part of Catholic Memorial and I'm sitting with my friends and they're all chanting, I need to chant with them, because if I don't, I'm going to hear about it later. How come you didn't, you know, how come you weren't with us on this? Mm. And so I believe that a lot of kids aren't even, they're not believing what they're saying, but they get caught up in this worry about what other people are thinking and this, I have to be part of this group. And again, until they hear from someone that what they're saying has meaning to them,
right,
then there's no reason to not do it because there's no consequence.
And Naomi and Allison, have you had that moment, that sort of aha moment? I mean, been on either side of that where you've sort of been in a conversation with other young people who have used this kind of language and been part of a process where people can sort of understand, oh, that's what it feels like when I say something like that.
I think there definitely has been instances of that. Yeah. As a leader of the feminism club, I've definitely been able to talk to people and explain why sexism, you know, isn't okay and why feminism matters. And I've definitely experienced that. But even specific to trash talk at basketball games, a classmate earlier this year addressed some really homophobic trash talk that was going on and, you know, addressed the whole school and said, this really isn't okay. And he actually got some people who came up to him and said, you know, I was involved in that. I was saying these homophobic things. And after you explained to me why that's hurtful, I do understand that now. And I'm sorry for what I said. And I will try to stop myself and my peers from doing things like that in the future.
So really dialoguing about this seems to be an
right.
important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners, we want to hear from you. Teens, parents, teachers, do you hear this kind of racist speech in your school, among your friends? If so, where does it come from? What explains it? What's the best way to confront us? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to the phones. We've got a bunch of listeners who'd like to get in on this conversation. Alex is calling from Medford. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. So I'd like to start off by saying I'm a big online gamer, and I have been for many years. And, you know, even when I was very young, I noticed a lot of hateful speech, whether it was racist, anti-Semitic, you know, homophobic, and it just created a very popular culture of using these almost as if it was in jest, you know, as if it was okay to joke about, and you know, especially in a group mindset where people are willing to not own up to it and they have no, you know, repercussions, you know, nobody's calling them out personally. You know, it's easy for us to think, oh, yeah, we can use this. Nobody's really going to get upset. But, you know, I think it comes down to setting the bar with this generation of what is okay and what isn't. And, you know, whether it be online, whether it be face-to-face with these people, this type of, you know, talk is just not acceptable. It is not something that should be, you know, just day-to-day life. You see it online. You see it in games. You see it.
Alex, I'm really glad you called. And Joni, you know, there's Alex from the sort of, you know, online world where there's a whole, I don't know, set of standards that are being almost reinvented as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about really needing to set the bar at a high level.
And I think think about how difficult this election season has been with people mm-hmm. trying to set the bar, and these are adults, and not being able to do that. That you have adults who are behaving badly, and that's a model. You know that a lot of attention is given to people who get outrageous. And you're in an on-game situation where there's people, then you're not face-to-face with them. There's no consequence for saying these things. And then if the lone wolf wants to be the person to confront, they're outnumbered.
Yeah.
And that's a threatening situation.
Let's go to Patty, who's calling from East Bridgewater. Patty, you're a high school teacher, right?
Yes.
Great. Well, I'd love to hear from you. What are you thinking?
So I was a high school teacher in a very diverse community for several years, and I've since moved on to a much less diverse high school. And what I'm seeing is that students who aren't exposed to a diverse population don't have the opportunity to talk about race and diversity often enough. I mean, it becomes a very organic part of a high school if it's a diverse high school. But if it's not, then we work with the literature and we work with the history as much as we can, but really talking intelligently and respectfully about race is not done often enough. And I think kids make mistakes in the way they talk about race because they don't know how.
Really interesting, Patty. It's a great comment. Naomi, you're nodding your head, and I'm just wondering what you're hearing in Patty's comment, what you're agreeing with, what's resonating with you.
Well, I just think the idea of education, but more importantly, having open conversation about this mm-hmm. is really what makes change.
Yeah.
You know, there's a class at my school in which people can it's a diverse class in which people can really engage in this kind of conversation and talk about the hard issues. And I think that's really important. And I think there needs to be more platforms like that where people can talk to people of different races, of different genders, of different sexualities, and really exchange ideas and talk about that. And I think there needs to be that space for education. So I definitely agree.
Patty, yeah go ahead. Sorry, Naomi. No, Allison, sorry. twin sisters. Give me a break here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the importance of education. I think that goes for adults as well as teens. And I think ignorance really is the biggest problem here. And, you know, especially in a high school or any other area that isn't diverse, that education really is important. And it really needs to be, when you use this is what happens and this is how it makes people feel. So, yeah, I completely agree. And I think education is the way that you get rid of unconscious biases and goes for adults as well as teens.
I want to listen to play a little more of this tape from the Boston Latin students. This is Maggie Noel and Kylie Webster-Cazot. They launched a social media campaign, hashtag Black at BLS on Martin Luther King Day this year with a video. And here's a little bit from that video.
Hashtag Black at BLS when you're the only Black student in your AP U.S. history course, and when slavery comes up, they all turn to you. Hashtag Black at BLS when people can walk in the halls saying without fear of being reprimanded.
Okay, and what was bleeped out there was a word that describes Black people that we're not going to play on the air. But especially that first comment, Naomi and Allison, I mean, talking about, you know, you're the only Black student in your AP U.S. history course, and when slavery comes up, they all turn to you. This gets at this idea of, you know, diversity within the classrooms being incredibly important and having a way to talk about these things, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I know something that they did in my school, in my AP US history class, is there were four classes and they put all of the African American students in one class to kind of avoid that, avoid that isolation of being that one Black student. But I think when doing that, I know if there are people that felt good about that, then that is definitely great. But I think when you do that, that's also there's definitely that results in more classes with less diversity. And I think part of it has to do with the achievement gap, how Black students and other students of color aren't encouraged into AP and honors classes as much as white students are. I think it has to do with that. But I also just think, just diversity in classrooms and outside is very important.
Big challenge. Let's go to Christy, who's calling from Brighton. Christy, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I just want to say two things as quickly as possible. I think the high academic standards at places like Boston Latin put too much pressure on students. In terms of Newton, it's an exclusive community I could not afford to live in. It's self-segregated by income. The kinds of economic pressures that young people are experiencing now make me want to cry. When I went to high school, I never read any books, and I came out higher test scores than anyone else because I paid attention in class and read other things that interested me. I think the whole society has to change, give young people a chance to get healthy exercise without competitive sports. In other words, non-competitive sports should be emphasized more than competitive sports, and lots of peer counseling, every kind you can think of.
Christy, thanks so much for that comment. Joni, I'm, you know, when I think about your survival guide to parenting teens, talking to your kids about sexting, drinking, drugs, and other things that freak you out, what's your advice to parents? I mean, say you're a parent and you hear about this stuff going on in schools. How do you talk to kids about this stuff?
Well, first, I think the first thing is that parents have to look at how they talk about things themselves. I'm reminded of when I was a very new therapist, and I was working with a couple who were worried about their teenage daughter who was dating a Jewish boy. They were Catholic and from a very predominantly Catholic, and they came in not knowing I was Jewish and kept talking about those Jews. Mm. And then I had to say to them, I'm actually one of those Jews. And it was as soon as I said that to them, you know, they were like, you know, they probably had never talked to a Jew. I mean, you know, I think there are parents also whose own lives are quite separated from diverse populations, and they may carry with them some stereotypes that they have unknowingly passed on to their children. So the first thing is to look in the mirror. The second thing is to have, you know, say, I you know, this thing, rather than getting to a lecturing thing, I can't believe this happened in your high school, and how could you have stood there and let something happen, but say, I get it must be hard when kids are in this situation. What do you think it must have felt like for either both sides to experience someone saying those things about them? But try not to lecture, but try to get them to articulate what it felt like and to be in that situation. Do you think it would have been hard to stand up and say, don't say that, that's mean? Or how could you have changed that situation, understanding with them that it's important to do something, but understanding how hard it can be?
Mm. Let's try to get a couple more calls into this conversation. Let's go to Linda, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Well, so I'm a parent of three kids and teenagers, but also I have been an educator of urban teenagers for almost 30 years. And as part of a school I founded, which sadly is no longer in existence, the Social Justice Academy, we had instituted a program of restorative justice as an alternative to the traditional approach to school discipline, which is more criminalized, I would say. Like, you know, you commit some infraction and then you are duly punished in whatever way, often involving some kind of exclusion like being suspended. And what restorative justice takes as its kind of central point is that when you've done something to another person, to an individual, or in some way to the community, you have created some kind of harm. And the best way to change that behavior in the future has been shown to have an opportunity to repair that harm. And that's the cornerstone of restorative justice. And students would sit together, listen to one another in a very kind of structured conversation, so that people could, in fact, hear other perspectives, be able to take other perspectives, learn some empathy. And we succeeded our first year trying this in reducing suspension something like 78%, possibly more.
Linda, it's a great idea, and Joni Geltman, it sounds like it would speak to some of what you're talking about. That is, getting kids to sit down and really get in each other's shoes and try to understand what it feels like.
Well, I think the Youth Congress that was held, I want to say it was last weekend, and a lot of these issues came up, and there was an article in the Globe that described what some of the ideas that the kids came up with. And one of them, a couple of young women, said, why don't we have, you know, we're going to try to do mix-it-up dinners at school. It's not an optional thing whether you come or not. You come. And then small groups of kids get together with kids they don't normally hang with. Because I think kids tend to segregate, self-segregate in their schools. They sit at the cafeteria table where people like-minded sit, and so there's this self-segregation that goes on. So then we need to come up with very strategic, structured ways for kids to intermingle. Not in a classroom. That's not enough. Unless and, you know, kids get intimidated, they won't do it in a big group. But if they're in smaller little groups, they'll listen and they'll talk.
Well, Linda, thanks so much for that call. Let's get a call from one more caller, high school teacher Brian, calling from North Andover. Brian, happy to have another teacher's perspective. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm also, as you said, I'm a teacher at a diverse high school, and there are a couple of things. One thing that we have now going on is a campaign against the N-word, because I work in a very diverse high school, but the N-word is still being used and misappropriated by a good majority of students in the high school. The other thing I wanted to say was that I think that saying that education is the answer is not giving people enough credit, because I feel like somehow people have become conditioned to think that saying the kinds of things that they say is all right. They know that they're being hurtful. It's not that they don't know. That's kind of my disagreement with what one of the, I think education is important. Of course it is. And dialogue is important. But there's got to be even more than that.
And what more does there have to be? What's your suggestion?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, I think that we have to, I've heard education being touted, you know, a lot, you know, throughout my lifetime as this is the answer. And, you know, the thing is that you have to have intergenerational education, I think. Hmm. You know, the community needs to be involved. It needs to be a larger effort.
Yeah. You know, Brian, I want to just follow up with you about one thing. You say you have a campaign at your school about not using the N-word, which, of course, is understandable. But, you know, part of me responds almost like, how is this possible in 2016 that we still have to have campaigns in schools not to use the N-word? I mean, why do we go on using these words? I mean, what's your answer as a teacher?
Well, you know, among teens, the N-word, when you use it with the at the end of it, it's seen as kind of part of you know, a cultural thing that it's not being used in a Jim Crow way, if you get my meaning.
I do, yes.
I feel like it's also a larger issue. You know, that our popular culture, hip-hop, and, you know, a lot of different art forms, you know, comedy seem to kind of condone the usage of a word that if, you know, you ask people honestly, it's just not it's not meaningful. It's not a good discourse.
Got it. Brian, I want to thank you so much for your call and putting some really important ideas on the table. Joni Geltman, let me sort of wrap this up with a final thought from you. I thought sort of Brian put some interesting ideas on the table, especially the way popular culture can mm-hmm. sometimes send conflicting messages about what's appropriate and what's not.
Well, I think media is a very powerful part of everybody's life now. And I think many parents don't even know what their kids are listening to. They don't know what their kids are saying on the text, their group text. They don't know what they're saying. You know, there's two different worlds being lived here, and there's no common denominator. And I think the parents need to be engaged, involved in what their kids are listening to, what they're watching, and what they're saying.
All right. And that's a great thought to end this conversation. Joni Geltman, she's a lecturer in Curry College's psychology department, author of A Survival Guide to Parenting Teens, talking to your kids about sexting, drinking, drugs, and other things that freak you out. Joni Geltman, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Also, Allison and Naomi Foreman Cass are Newton High School students. For a link to their letter to the editor of the Boston Globe, you can go to our website at radioboston.org. Allison, Naomi, thanks so much for coming in. We're really grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, a lot more. We have sports with Bill Littlefield talking about baseball and Cuban-American reconciliation. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.